We're going to start talking about section 4 of the notes, the deep copy problem. This is a problem that we will cover in this class, probably at least twice, and it's a problem that we will cover again in the next course or two, because invariably, no matter how many times we cover it, it seems like students either don't quite understand it or they forget about it later and they keep bringing in code that has a problem as a result of it. It's a very common, it's a very serious problem, and it's one that if you aren't careful, results in programs that are very hard to debug. Basically here, if we assign two structures, two records to each other, two structs, that's not really a problem. The language allows that. The default assignment of one record to another basically just copies the field member values from one record into the other one. And here we've got this simple little email account structure which has two strings in it, an ID and a host. And if we've got a couple of structures, A and B, and we set B equal to A, we get an exact copy, just like we would thought. And that's fine. The target ends up being an exact copy of the source. That's what you expect when you do regular variable assignment. You set X equal to Y. You expect X to basically be a separate copy of Y. And as long as these structures don't contain any pointers to dynamic memory, that's fine. However, when they contain dynamic content, we can run into a bit of a problem here. If we take that email account structure and we embed it in another structure here, the email address, and we are going to store a pointer to a string array in here called aliases. Here at Virginia Tech, like a lot of other places, you're allowed to set up email aliases for yourself. I have a couple of them. I have net@bt.edu, which I grabbed a couple years ago when it came free. And I've got a couple others that I'm not going to tell you about. But you can set those up to be whatever you want to, and they'll go to your same email account. So here, if we define that, if we allocate an array like that, called an array of 3, that's the maximum that you're allowed to assign here at Virginia Tech, then we basically should realize when we set up a record like that, that only the pointer is really within the record. The array that it's pointing to is not physically located in the structure. That array is physically out in the heap, out in dynamic memory. So, if we do an assignment, if we do an assignment from one email address structure to another one at that point, it copies over the field members one by one. And we don't get a copy of the dynamically allocated aliases array. Basically, what we get is a copy of the pointer. So that both of these structures now have a pointer that's pointing to the same array out in memory, the same dynamically allocated array. Now, that's not usually what you think about when you take two variables and you say X equals Y. You think now you have a separate copy from the other one and of all of its values. And that's not quite true. That's basically what results is what's termed a shallow copy, because we haven't really made a complete copy of everything that's in that structure and everything the structure points to. Okay, we've made a copy of all of its member fields, but not everything that maybe those member fields point to. This shallow copy can give you a lot of problems. The same problem really shows up in class objects. Class objects, by default, if we assign one object to another, it does a member-by-member copy from one of the objects to the other. It has the language provides, just like it does for structures, a default assignment overload. the fault assignment operator, but it's just a member-wise, member-by-member copy.
That would be a good class to be able to access the private members to copy them through.
Yes, that default assignment is considered to be part of the class, so it's allowed to do that. The language provides that for us. Now, there's really no good solution for this shallow copy when you're only working with structures and assigning structures. There's really no good solution for it. However, with C++, there is a nice, elegant solution provided for us by the language. What we really want to do is we want to make a deep copy. We want to not only copy all of the member fields, but we also want to copy and make copies of any dynamic memory that those member fields point to. Now, in order to do this, what we will need to do is we will need to overload, write an assignment overload operator. Now, I think we've previously talked in here about how to overload the equality operators and the inequality operators, right? Haven't we done that in here previously?
No.
We haven't, huh? I thought we had. Well, at any rate, it's not that difficult. The C++ language provides a reserved word called operator. And you can follow that by an operator symbol, a language operator symbol, not by everyone. Not every operator symbol in C++ can be overloaded. Most of them can be. Some of them get to be quite tricky in overloading them. We will talk about some, but not all of them, and you will learn how to overload some of the more trickier ones in 2704 next semester. But here, if we want to overload the assignment operator, we basically just include this function header like this in our class. Now, we list the class name as a return value, and we're actually going to return that by address. Now, there's a subtle distinction. Most of the time when you're returning things and you've been used to defining the return type for a function, you just list that type, like out here in front of the function, right? Well, what you are really returning when you do that is a value. You're returning it by value. You're returning that by value. You're returning a copy. We'll talk more about that later. That's different from returning something by reference. It's similar to when you pass. When you pass things by value, when you pass parameters by value, are you passing the actual parameter? No, you're passing what? A copy. So when you return things by value, you're not returning the actual whatever the function sends back. You're returning a copy. But when you pass a formal parameter, or an actual parameter to a formal parameter, when you pass it by reference, then you are passing what? The address, the actual parameter. And when you return something by reference, you're returning the actual variable or the actual object. So, we'll talk more about this later. And this assignment overload operator, the equals operator, takes as its parameters, it will take one object of this class and it will take it by constant reference because it's not going to be changing it. This is the source. The parameter here is the source. The target is the object that that is being assigned to. The target is the implied object that this operator assignment overload gets invoked upon. Let's look at a first attempt here on slide 4.6 of doing this deep assignment copy overload operator here for the email address class. So here we define our function heading, as you can see, just like we've been doing before. There probably shouldn't be a space there. We've got a return type, the class name that it belongs to, the scope resolution operator, then the rest of the function heading. We go ahead and we assign the non-dynamic members. The PID gets assigned to eaddress.pid. Now I can access that private member of the eaddress object because this is part of the class. This assignment overload operator is part of the class. So that means it has the same class scope. It can access those private data members of parameters of objects of the same class. Yes?
Is it better to use the public data members and the private function or like
a... I think so, because it avoids as long as it would just be a simple accessor function to return you back the value of the private data member, I would go ahead in this case and just access it and use it and avoid the function call overhead. If it's a function though that's doing some calculations, then you should actually call the function that's part of that class to get it to do those calculations and not duplicate that code. But in this case, since it's a simple private data member and this is part of the class, go ahead and access it directly. We don't copy the pointer. Okay, we don't really have to initialize it to null, but we don't copy it. Then we allocate. We use the new operator, the new function, and we allocate. Oops, probably should have did a no throw there. We allocate a new string array, an entirely different array dynamically. And then what we do is we do a little loop here, which goes down from 0 to the maximum aliases, and it copies over from the existing array in the source object to the corresponding index in the target array. So it just copies them over. That's just like copying one array's elements to another. The return, well, we'll talk about that in a second. Unfortunately, while this looks like a pretty good solution to this, it contains a little trick, some tricky logic errors that we have to deal with. Let's assume that this was the code we were going to use. So let's say we've got a couple existing objects here. We've got an email object, which contains an ID, a host, a few not so funny, but whatever, aliases here. And we've got this other one here, this Joe email address object. And we want to set Joe equal to email. If we do that, and we execute that following that previous code, we have a problem. If we execute that previous code, we would copy over the non-dynamic members. That's fine. That's not a problem. Then we would actually allocate a new array, and we would go down through here copying over the values in the array. That's not a problem. The problem is, what about this array that Joe did contain? We haven't taken care of that. It was never deleted inside of this assignment overload operator. So if we're not careful, this becomes a memory leak or garbage. So we say, okay, we got to handle that. No problem. We can handle that. We'll just delete that array, that previous array first. So here on slide 4.8, we've got our second attempt at this. And before we do the allocation of the new array, we'll delete the old array. And that worked for that previous, that solved that previous little problem then. That previous problem, this previous array in Joe would get reclaimed. We wouldn't have a memory leak. That's not a problem. However, even though it doesn't make a lot of sense, you can certainly do self-assignment. And for normal variables, if you say A equals A, does that cause a problem with your code? No. It doesn't do anything useful. but it certainly doesn't cause a problem. Unfortunately, if we say email equals email with this code up here, we've got a problem. Because now what happens is, well, actually, let me back up for just a moment to the previous slide. When I say Joe equals email, what gets sent to the code, of course, email is the source, Joe's the target. So it's almost the same as if I had said Joe dot equals, and then in parentheses, email, as if I had done a member call like that. I think actually you can do that in the language, but don't do it because it looks weird. But that does make it clear as to which is the parameter. The one on the right-hand side of the operator becomes the parameter. The left-hand side becomes the default object that the member function is invoked upon. So when I say email equals email, unfortunately now, these two things are the same. The parameter, the reference, is referencing the same memory, the same object in memory as the default object that this is invoked upon. So when I say delete aliases, it goes out here and it deletes this thing that was out in memory. And then I declare a new one, so it allocates a new one. And then when I copy over, it copies over. Now, does it bomb? Does the compiler complain? No. Doesn't create a compilation error. It doesn't create an execution error. It creates a logic error because suddenly now the contents of this array is now basically nulled out. We now have a bunch of null strings in there. But we don't have any errors, any runtime or compilation errors that we can easily find or that the machine can find for us. We now basically have logic errors that we have to find. So, we have to handle this. And there is a solution in the language for handling this. And the solution is this. This is the solution to this problem. And this is the problem when you get into object-oriented programming a lot of times, because you have to talk about this object and that object. So, in the language, there is a special object pointer, a special variable called this. And it gets every object that you instantiate automatically, sort of implicitly includes it. It includes a pointer to itself called this object. And that pointer is actually, it's a hidden pointer. It's not explicitly defined. And when you invoke a member function, it automatically gets passed to the member function. It's actually the way that member functions know which object they've been invoked upon, because this points to the particular object they've been invoked upon. You don't actually have separate copies of member functions. You really only have one of them. And when they execute, how do they know which object they're supposed to be executing on by default? It's for this parameter that they receive by default. It's not really counted in terms of the size of the object. If you count up how many bytes are used to store it, or if you use the size of function in the language, it won't be reported. However, you can use this just like the function members use it. When you actually access a data member inside of some member function, like on the previous slide here, where I referenced PID, for example. How did the function know which PID? It actually used this pointer. So it could say this arrow PID. It was almost like it said this arrow PID. So it's this PID, the PID that belongs to this object. Now, it implicitly does that. When you use a private data member inside of one of the member functions, it implicitly uses the this pointer to find out where it's at, dereference it. It does that automatically. But we can also do it explicitly. We can use this to explicitly, by indirection, by dereferencing the pointer, the this pointer, to refer to the object members. Most of the time you don't want to do that. Most of the time that's not useful because the language will do that for you automatically. What is useful, and the reason that it's included in the language, is because at times you need to be able to refer to the object that the default object that the member function is executing upon. And the this object solves that for you, the this pointer. The type of the this pointer, it changes a little bit. It depends upon the function. It depends upon the class. When you use this inside of some class X member function to a non-constant member function, then it has this type. It's as though it was declared to be a pointer to type X, the class X, but it was declared to be a constant pointer. In other words, you can't reassign this. Inside of some member function, you can't suddenly say, oh, this is pointing at this object. I'm going to set it point to some other object or somewhere else. The language won't allow you to do that. If you're in a constant member function, a member function's been defined as const because it's not going to be changing any of its private data members, then it's actually a constant pointer to a constant target. So the type of this changes depending upon the class it's used in and the type of the member function, whether it's a constant or non-constant member function. And that gets to be a little bit of a thorny issue at times, because if you want to set some other pointer equal to this, if you've got some other pointer inside of a member function and you want to set it equal to this, then the const of that pointer that you're setting equal to this has to match the const of the this pointer. So if you want to set another pointer equal to this, that other pointer is going to, that other pointer in a constant member function also has to be a constant pointer. We'll talk some more about that a little bit later on also. So, here now on slide 410 is the actual solution to our assignment overload problem. Here we now have we have the same as before, except we start our function off with an if statement. We say if this is not equal to address of eaddress, that object was passed in by constant reference. So if we take the address of that, we're actually finding out where that is at in memory, and we can compare the address that's in this to see if it's equal or not equal to that address. That's the check for self-assignment. If this is not equal to the address, we know we're not doing self-assignment at that point, and it's okay. We know it's okay then to go ahead and delete the existing alias array and then do the deep copy. Now, otherwise, if it is equal to eaddress and they're the same, do we need to bother to do anything? No, because they've tried to tell us to set X equal to X or A equal to A, and we don't have to do anything to accomplish that. It's already equal to itself. So the one thing we do have to do, though, because we want to return this by reference. We need to return it by reference. We must return it by reference because of the way the language allows you to chain assignments. You may not be aware of this, but in C++, you can say something like X equals Y equals Z equals 1. And it will set all of those equal to 1. And the reason that it does the rightmost one first, but then the value of that assignment, the value of the assignment, is used in the next assignment. So when you say Let's say x equals y equals w equals 1. First, w equals 1 is performed, 1 stored in w, and the results of the assignment, or the value that was assigned, was 1. And so 1 is then used in the next one. Y equals whatever, which is 1. And then the value of that is used in the next one. That's called chaining assignments. The language allows it. In order to allow it, in order to make this work, we need to return a reference. And to return a reference, we just return the object, the actual object that was passed. The actual object that was passed was the source object, which is star this. Not this. This is a pointer. This is a pointer to the object. It's not the actual object. In order to get to the actual object, we have to dereference the pointer here. So we dereference this. That allows us to chain assignments. We could say, for example, Bob equals Joe equals email, and that would be fine. Not the following, okay? Even though the language will sort of allow that weird assignment syntax, don't do it. Not positive the language will allow it, but I believe it will, but don't do it. Now it is kind of, to sort of tie this discussion together and to be truthfully honest in this little example that I made up for the notes, I should point out that in this example, in all of those email address objects, the alias array of strings never really changed size once it was allocated. Because it changed, it never changed size. Rather than making it a dynamic array, I could have made it a static array. And if I'd made it a static array, would I have needed the assignment overload? No. Okay? Because then the array would have actually been inside the object and the default assignment would have worked. Also, to point out too, logically, since I have to think about things at times, since even if I had decided not to allocate it statically but allocate it dynamically, I really didn't need to bother to deallocate it here and then reallocate another string array of exactly the same size. I could just as well remove these two statements, the delete and the new, and just copy them over into the already existing array. Copy the alias strings from the source into the existing target array. So I could have really avoided this if I had sort of been thinking about my problem a little bit differently. At times you want to ask yourself, do I really need to be using dynamic memory? You may or you may not. It comes in useful, but you may not always need it. And we will discuss that a little bit more throughout the term. However, if the two objects did contain different size arrays, then I definitely would need to do this approach. But I wanted to keep this fairly simple for our discussion. So, is that every question?
I have a question about the first statement. If you
want
a reference to the
experiment, but
your password
that the
return type is
my reference? Yep.
Reference?
Yep.
Then
that doesn't look right to you, does it?
No.
Yeah, that's it. It just doesn't look right. But logically it is right, because think of it from the perspective of passing a variable to a function by reference. Mm-hmm. When you pass it by reference, all that you do is in the function heading, you put the ampersand to indicate that you're passing it by reference, right? And in the function call, you just list that variable there, right? The one that you actually want to pass. And the language, the compiler handles finding the address of that and passing the address, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to tell it to, let me have the address of this so that you can pass the address. It knows to do that, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it automatically does that. So here, we're just relying upon the same thing. When we put that ampersand here for the return type to indicate that this is a return by reference, then we have to actually give it the object so that it can automatically get find the address itself to return by reference.
Okay.
Okay, so that's why we have to actually dereference it so that it will then automatically, I know it's almost sort of doing the same thing twice, because we already have the address stored in this, but references automatically go and look up the address. And so we can't provide the address ourselves. We have to provide the object so that it can go and get the address. And besides that too, remember, the type of this, it's a pointer. So the type of this is that class name star, right? That's the type. But the type that I'm returning back is just a reference to the object, so it's not a pointer. Okay, so that's why I have to dereference the this. It may not look right to you, but logically it's correct if you think about it. And you're going to have to get used to it, because I don't think you're going to be able to convince the ISO and ANSI standards committees to change this for you. Okay? Questions?
So your return statement, are those parentheses necessary?
I don't know. But I'm going to put them there anyway, because otherwise I don't like the return star of this. Okay? It just looks a little weirder. I don't think they're actually required, though. But they certainly don't hurt anything. Other questions? Now, you might think that now that we went through this fairly lengthy discussion and a somewhat complex, involved discussion, that might be all there is to this deep copying problem. But no, unfortunately, it's not. It crops up in another place in the language. Actually, a few other places. Yeah, the fun just keeps getting better and better, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If we pass an object as an actual parameter, we can actually have shallow or deep copies. Remember, when we're passing an object by value, we make a copy. When we pass a variable by value, we make a copy and pass the copy. That's what the language does. So, in this example above, we're passing that email address parameter mail by value, by copy. Now, the copying of objects is basically performed by a special class constructor called the copy constructor. Okay? Not too terribly difficult to remember. And if you don't, by default, the language provides a copy constructor. Just like by default, it provides an assignment overload operator for your class. Unfortunately, the default copy constructor is basically just as powerful as the default assignment operator, which means it just copies the members. It copies the members as a member by member copy, and that's what you get. And that's okay as long as your objects don't involve pointers to dynamic memory. As long as they don't involve pointers to dynamic memory, the default copy constructor will serve your class, and there's hardly any case of where you would need to implement an actual copy constructor. So, let's look at the result, though, of what happens if we rely upon the default copy constructor for passing objects by value that do contain dynamic memory, here on slide 412. So if we have this print addresses function, and we call this thing with the email object as a parameter, and here's our existing email object. Well, that matches up to the mail formal parameter, and we end up with a shallow copy, so that now the aliases pointer in the mail object is pointing to the same array as the aliases pointer in the email object. And we basically have an alias pointer situation. Well, unfortunately, when this function will execute 5, that doesn't cause any problems with this function executing and outputting its information. That won't cause a problem. It'll actually go through the array. It'll output each of those strings correctly. Not a problem. However, when this function terminates, what happens to this copy? It goes out of scope. It no longer exists. When objects go out of scope and no longer exist, what automatically executes upon them? The destructor function. And this class does contain a destructor, if you look back in the class declaration. And a destructor function is used in a class that contains dynamic memory to do what? To deallocate, to delete the dynamic memory, right? So when mail goes out of scope, the destructor on it fires, and the destructor then basically deallocates the array that the mail object was pointing to. Now, that won't hurt mail at all. However, when we come back into main or whatever function called that, our email object now has a dangling pointer. Its alias pointer is now pointing to the array that was just deleted and was deallocated. And we can have all kinds of havoc ensuing at that point. So we've got to take care of this. We can't just rely upon the default copy constructor. There are a couple ways of taking care of it. We could always pass objects by reference. That's not really an option to us, since if we always pass them by reference, we have to then guard always, every point through our program, guard upon some function, perhaps accidentally even changing an object when it shouldn't be changing the object. Even if it has to go through its member functions, it can still do it. So we have no control at that point over when our objects might be changed or not. So what we really need to do is to force a deep copy to be made whenever it's passed by value. And we do that by providing our own copy constructor. We code up our own copy constructor that contains the deep copy logic code. In order to do this, we have to define a constructor, just like we previously defined constructors, except that a copy constructor for a class has a special signature. The copy constructor for a class takes one parameter, it's an object of the class, and it's passed by constant reference. Okay? That's how the compiler knows that this is the copy constructor. When it sees a signature, a header for a constructor, where it's only accepting one parameter, and that parameter is an object of the class, and it's being passed by constant reference, the compiler brands that one the copy constructor, and it won't let you create a second one or like that. So, at that point then, what we do is, and we would include this as the prototype in the class header. It also goes in the class declaration. But then we basically would do something like this. We copy the non-dynamic members. The logic ends up being almost, but not quite the same as the assignment overload operator. It's usually a little bit simpler. First we copy the non-dynamic members, then we allocate our new dynamic memory, and then we go through the existing dynamic memory, however we need to do that, and copy the values from the existing dynamic memory over into this new dynamic memory for the copy. By default, this thing gets invoked whenever we pass a parameter by value. So that here, when we are calling print addresses, and mail is the formal parameter, and email is passed to it, then the copy constructor fires to make a copy of email into mail. Email becomes the actual parameter, becomes the parameter that's passed to the copy constructor. And the formal parameter becomes the default object, the implicit object that this points to in the copy constructor, that the copy is being made in. Now, everybody, at that point then, everything's fine, because then we actually have an actual copy in mail. When print addresses execute, and it executes fine, then when it finishes executing, the destructor will then destruct the dynamic memory that's in the copy. And our original object will still be pristine and untouched. Okay? Now, you might, there's a couple little caveats here that you have to consider. And if we initialize, when we define an object, its constructor fires, right? The constructor on the object fires when it gets instantiated. However, the language provides a way for you to initialize variables in a definition when you define them, right? You can say like int x equals 5, correct? And it sort of instantiates that integer, and it automatically stores the value into it. Well, the language also provides this for objects. Instead of saying int x equals 5, I can also say int x equals y, if y is a pre-existing integer, correct? Well, I can say, if I define an instance of an object, I can initialize it to an existing object that already exists. I can say email address user email equals email. Now, you might think, since that equal sign is in there, or assignment operator, you might think that's assignment. And you might think that these things contain dynamic memory, that the assignment overload operator would automatically execute. But it turns out it doesn't. Initialization is, you're not making a copy into an existing object. You're making a copy into an object that didn't previously exist, which is the same thing you do when you pass an object to another, to a function by value. When you pass an object by value into another function, did that formal parameter previously exist? No. So we didn't have to worry about it having any existing memory. When we did the copy constructor, we didn't bother to delete any existing memory because it didn't previously exist. Same thing holds true here. And for that reason, when you do object initialization, that actually gets performed by the copy constructor. The copy constructor is what actually executes when you initialize an object to another object. Notice I said when you initialize an object. That means when you have instantiated the object, and right in that instantiation you have set it equal to another object. If that would not be the same, if I say email address user mail semicolon, and then below that I say user mail equals email, that's not the same thing. If I do it that way, then the default constructor would execute upon user mail, and then the assignment overload operator would execute to do the assignment. If I break that initialization up into two statements, into an instantiation and then an assignment, then I have the invoking of two functions, the default constructor and the assignment overload operator. But like this, where I'm initializing it right in the definition, it only invokes the copy constructor. It's a subtle little point, but it can be actually necessary. Also, too, there's another place that the copy constructor executes. You were saying that you didn't like when we return star this by reference, right? And I pointed out to you that returning things by reference is a little bit different than what you've previously been doing, where you've just been listing the type and then the function name. I said by default that meant you were always really returning things by value. Well, that means you have to make a copy and the copy gets returned. If you think about it, that makes perfect sense, because previously in a function, if locally in the function you had some local variable, some integer x, and you compute x to be some value, and then you say return x because your function returns an integer, can you really return x? Because once that function finishes executing, what happens to x? It's gone. So you have to be able to return a copy. Same thing happens for an object. If I have some function that returns an object by value, am I actually returning an actual object? No, I have to be able, because if I have an object defined locally in that function that I return, once the function finishes executing, the object gets destructed. So I have to be able to return a copy. Well, do we have a function that makes copies of objects? Yes, it's the copy constructor. So when you define a function that returns an object by value, the copy constructor gets executed. If you don't have one, the default copy constructor gets executed. And that's perfectly fine as long as your objects don't contain dynamic memory. If your objects don't contain dynamic memory, this whole discussion that we've been talking about today sort of drops by the wayside. It isn't really a concern at that point. So the moral of this story is that when you are implementing a class that involves dynamic allocation, now I've had students who come to me, even in later classes, they'll come to me and go, I didn't implement a copy constructor because even though this class contains dynamic memory, I was very careful. And I made sure that I always passed my objects by reference, that I never returned them by value, that I never initialized one object to another object, and that I never assigned two objects to each other. And I go, well, that's well and good. But you came to me because your program is misbehaving, right? And they're going, yes, and I don't know why. And invariably, it's because somewhere along the line, they missed something like that, where the language automatically, because of something they did, executed a default copy constructor or a default assignment overload operator, and they ended up with a shallow copy, and that's why their program is now misbehaving. And it's very tough in a large program, and in large and relative. I would imagine for most of you right now, the amount of code that you're producing for this program is probably topping out to be about the largest amount of code you've ever produced, right? And it's going to grow. Okay? So for right now, this is large for you. In another couple of years, this won't be large. You'll think of this as a medium-sized program. And then when you get out in the real world, you're working with a team of programmers on millions of lines of code, your idea of large will suddenly grow. But when you get into doing serious programming, it's almost impossible when you are creating a class that contains dynamic memory to be so meticulous to make sure that you never pass them by value, that throughout all of your code, that you've never returned one by value throughout all of your code, that you've never initialized one object to another one throughout all of your thousands and thousands of lines of code, and that you've never accidentally assigned two of the objects to each other. It's so hard to do that that there's no point in doing it. There's no point in being lazy. There's no point, if you've got a class that contains dynamic memory, then you, this says then you should make this you better. You better if you come to see me. Because basically, I tell my students in my later classes, and pretty much I'll tell you this too. If you bring me code and saying, I need help on this, I'll look at your class. If your class has dynamic memory and it doesn't have an assignment overload operator and it doesn't have a copy constructor, I'll go, I'm not going to look at this code. Take this code away and go implement these functions and then see if you have the same problem, and then you can come back and see me. Because I'm not even going to bother to look at it. It's a waste of my time. You better implement them. Right? The logic errors that ensue if you don't implement them are terribly difficult to try and track down, and they're not worth the mental anguish and energy that you spend trying to track them down. The amount of energy that you expend to write the logic for the deep copy, for the assignment overload operator and the copy constructor, and once you write one, the logic is almost the same. It takes almost no time to write the other one once you've written one of them. So go ahead and do it. It's cheap insurance, as this says. Okay, that finishes up this section of the notes.